How do you write the question, what is true love?
Ah, wonderful. That's, I think, what is true love? So love and death are universal topics. Two things on Savitri. So both Sri Aurobindo and the mother have defined it very beautifully. True love, and Sri Aurobindo in the life divine. Normally one associates life divine with philosophy. And he says, love in its some real form enters at the third stage of human evolution. After which the fourth is all about spiritual consciousness. So before love, there is desire and hunger, which is about wanting. And love in its real sense is about giving. So the urge to give, and this one can find most clearly at a human level, either in the disciple or more accurately guru in a human form, giving himself to the disciple. But that's a different category altogether. But the other level at which you find love is mother to a child. So the mother speaks of these four stages of love. First is when we love ourselves and there is nobody else who is important, and their importance is only relative to what we get from them. Then the second stage is we get and then we give, because we are receiving, so we give. The third stage is we give, but we also want to get. And the fourth is where we give and we are not expecting anything except recognition. At least there should be recognition that, you know, there is this giving involved. And the fifth is that one just gives, just as one breathes, it becomes our core nature. And if one has reached this point, it means there is already a degree of psychic development, because it's only under the pressure of the awakened soul that this kind of love can begin to blossom. Otherwise, unless there is a pressure of the soul from within and pushes us, generally it is all about wanting, demand, expecting, etc., etc. So there is a beautiful line from Savitri passage, which I want to. So Savitri's death says there is nothing like love. It's all an emotion, which is due to some chemicals in the brain. It's a disorder. God's plant all these things, which are unrealistic, idealistic. And then there is a long answer, and Savitri at the end of the answer replies, a mystic slow transfiguration works. All our earth starts from the soil and climbs to the sky. And love that was once an animal's want, then a sweet madness in the rapturous heart, then an ardent comradeship in the human mind, becomes a lonely soul's yearning space. So it goes through that phases where it usually at the most early stages of love, it's physical, vital, where that's what unfortunately most people call love, but not really. Well, love is there behind, but it's more of a pleasure that they are seeking. And then there is, the heart is involved, where there is some sense of reciprocation, give and take, want and give, to possess and be possessed. That's when love really starts blossoming in the human heart. And then it's not enough just to have an emotional giving and receiving, but also sense of companionship which human beings seek the more they are developed. And then as the psychic, the soul within begins to put a pressure, then there is the urge to give. And initially the soul gives to humans for the sake of their, you know, because it doesn't know anything higher. But as it develops, it begins to turn toward the divine element, either in humans or in the highest peak. So in Indian thought, this is something very beautiful, that love has been exalted to divine heights by even psychic love between human beings, where human beings have, I mean, the whole idea of sati originally was that a woman, possibly mother says that possibly because women alone can love like this. Also because human beings have a psychic being, they can love like this. Mother says that. Gods cannot love like this, because human beings have this psychic being where they can completely give themselves to the object of love. And that itself, doesn't matter who is the person, and that's why we have our ideas of Mandodari as a sati. And there are quite a few such characters in Indian thought. Well, because of this power of giving as an act of love, they evolved tremendously. But yes, it must go further, go beyond the psychic into the spiritual realm and give itself to the divine. And then one stage of love, which so far has been known in mysticism, giving oneself to the divine in a merger. But the mother adds to this, return back to the earth and share that what you have received from there with the world. So we see in that line in Savitri, magical line, imperfect is the joy not shared by all. So the traditional mystic end of the journey of love is when it merges with the divine. Because there is a merger, there is no more love. Because you have become one. But in Sri Aurobindo's yoga, it's because earth is important. You come back to earth. And while an essential part of your being is with the divine, you have chosen to come back and share all that one receives from the divine with everyone. I mean, everyone is not a propagandist spirit, but the fact that whoever, there are plenty of people who are seeking, who are thirsty, and you share it. And that quality of love is very different. And it is this that is eventually going to transform earthly life into life divine. So the mother says in one of the passages that the power of transformation is basically with love. And we see that even in a human love, even in one human hour, can change human beings, but momentarily. Because it's a tremendous energy and it can't be held. So there's a whole passage in Savitri where there's a description why Savitri could hold this power of love, which is very difficult. Never a rarer creature bore its shaft. So she can hold it because she is wide and strong. So two things which are required is, or rather three things, wideness, narrow channel cannot hold love. Then strong, you need strength. Otherwise it just tends to throw itself away. And the third is stillness. In unstable mind, unstable heart, flippant nature, it cannot hold the power of love. So these are the three elements that the mother and Sri Aurobindo say to hold love. And finally it is a beautiful one single sentence where there are a few things about love. She says, love is not sexual intercourse. Love is not the heart's hunger, emotional hunger. So what is love? Love is the comes from the one within the person, goes back to the one in another person. And only those who are very wide and mighty and strong can hold it. So love is divine loving, not just this creation, himself, because all is himself. This is the highest truth, of course. But through the play of forms. That's what we see in Sri Krishna's story of Leela. So Leela is Krishna, is loving Krishna, but through all the forms, manifestation. So this is the ultimate of love. But to start with, it is to give and take. That's the most human expression, commonest expression. So.
Love is for strong and wide and for the instruments, channels which are widened. Then for those who are not, does the love widen them?
They are normally not able to hold the energy for long. So it tends to disappear, as happens in most human relationships. That when love touches the heart, it's beautiful. Then over a period of time, it is not able to be held. So it tends to either, it is attacked by the contrary forces. So what are these contrary forces? They are jealousies. Possessiveness is natural in love. But possessiveness in love is by the fact of love. It's not something which is external. It can go to an extent where wherever one is, one knows that, well, there is that perfect unity. And such loves have manifested very rarely. So it is attacked mostly by forces of jealousies, insecurity, domination, as mother speaks of domination, and fear. All these things may come in. So the way is that, yes, love can widen if you keep increasing. So somebody said it in a very nice, this short mystic story. So he said, love heals. So the other person asked this mystic, okay, but what if it's not working? So he said, increase the dose. I love this. So nowadays, by the way, even in, just as an aside, I'll come back to that. Even in medicine, they are speaking about it. There's a very beautiful book I read by Dr. Bernie Siegel. He's an oncologist, deals with tumors and all. And the name of the book itself is revealing, Love, Miracle, Medicine. So the power of love to heal, a lot of people, because they are deprived of love, have this subconscious death wish. And today we see it as a civilizational disease. I call it a civilizational disease. And it's going to increase because when we deal with machines, so what happens, whatever you love and deal with, you become more and more like that. So dealing with machines and with AI, life is becoming an algorithm. So it's at the expense of your heart, your feelings. I was just sharing my own experience of traveling abroad, that, you know, it's becoming more and more mechanical. And, you know, while at one level it is efficient, but it buys it at the expense of something which is deeply embedded in the human heart, the power of love. So this is how, it's a civilizational disease, and I often use the word vitamin L. So increase the power of love. Now, if that is not possible, then of course reject the distortions to keep it pure. Because often people ask that, well, I don't get love, what should I do? Tell them, you can love. Nobody can prevent you from loving another. And so love is not just a man and a woman. Love this creation, love the trees, the plants, love the pebbles, love immediate people. That's one thing which in family we learn the lesson of love.
I think the more problem is that I'm not being loved.
Yes.
And this subconscious.
So that's exactly why we need to learn that love is in power with all higher powers, very interestingly. When you share it, it grows. So the remedy that this is a very common problem. I meet people because it's not that they are not being loved. They want love from one particular person. That's a problem. Because love is all over. I mean, if you learn to feel it, if you roam around in the mountains alone, the mountain loves you, the trees love you, the stream loves you. I mean, everything loves you. But we want from that particular person. Often people go on the verge of suicide because of that, and ask them, don't your parents love you? Yes, they love me. What about your child? Yes, loves. I said, because of one particular person's maybe idiocy, if you want to put it, you want to put an end to your life and say that I don't receive love. Love is everywhere, but the narrower we become, the more we want to tap it into. That's where the problem of narrowness comes. First, we want from one particular person, then in one particular way. That's what happens with narrowness. So then we start getting cut off from the energy of love. Also because the cup becomes so small that, you know, it cannot come beyond a point. So even for knowledge, for example, you have to be very wide. Power, one has to be very vast. All this is required for any divine forces. So we can start giving love. And nobody stops us from giving love to hundreds of creatures. I know people who start loving animals. And it's healing. You can talk to trees, and I'm not going into even research. You can talk to trees and they respond to you. They love you, but in their own way. They don't say that I love you. But they just absorb things. I know about cats. Mother has spoken of an example. They will never say anything. People think cats are not attached. But they don't say, they will not express much. Some cats do. They will start going near your leg and moving around. But that's it. Otherwise, they are pretty independent. But if there is they are very sensitive to occult things. And if there is some kind of an occult attack coming on you, and they sense it, they take it on themselves. Mother recounts that story which happened in art house. In fact, animals, because they don't not calculating, they are much more open to the power of love. They respond and they can give back. So always love is all around, and we have to learn to.
These days, horse whisperer, dog whisperers.
Yes, horse, cow, $200. Now, you know, there is one more latest which is about that a child he discovered, I mean grown up person, that if only I could, you know, hug my parents once a day, that's all. So Kavita ne to isko use karna shuru kar diya. You also told this story, my son. So he said, you see, you are telling this story. So he now comes very religiously, ritualistically. And if he forgets, he says, what about today? So he will come back. Now this, it's a very simple gesture. See, what do parents want? They are not wanting that you do 100 things. Just a little hug from a child is, parents' day is made. And it's so simple. Now, I don't know, it's at one level it's so simple, but somehow it's missing because of this civilizational disease. Life has become too much left brain oriented, calculating. Where there is calculation, there is no love. The beautiful poems of Sri Aurobindo on love. And where he says that it's a poem where he has expressed states of consciousness. So one state of consciousness where he expresses, you could love me only for a moment. That's your limitation. Now, if I calculate and love the same way, then it'll be a shopman's heart. So for me, it's a whole life. So to each his own capacity. So
AI, what is AI doing
then? So AI is creating algorithms. See, the problem with AI is, before AI, or rather man has gone through three stages of evolution. One was the holy book decides. I'm cutting off the pre-religious aspect. But in religion it came in a different way, that God will decide, the God has given the law and somehow he will decide what is right and wrong, and based on the holy book I decide what is right and wrong. Then came very nice movement of humanism. Your heart will tell you. So you learn to dig into your heart and feel what is right and wrong. This is what mother also suggests. Children should be taught from childhood. But now what has happened? This movement has started. Now almost like an abortive way. Now it's not you who decide. It's the algorithm which decides. See, this has caught up very badly in the Western world. And I'm sure you must be knowing it. It's not you who say, I have a problem. The Amazon that tells you what is the problem. Which book you should read. It has studied you thoroughly. So you are studied. I mean, you keep a mobile and you are already, all your data is there. And if you want to, and it's already AI has started this business. That's how now democracies are being manipulated. Because every person's smallest reaction, you enter into a room. For example, when I came into this room, I was drawn to that picture. And I was contemplating that, you know, it's probably mother sari or some piece of cloth. I didn't see any of the pictures, though these are such wonderful pictures. But I was drawn to that because of the probably mother sari. Now, all this is noted. So if it has to suggest me something, it will be based on that.
It is noted by what?
I just, I just felt that, you know, what is there?
That this is noted mean when you said...
No, you have a mobile, you don't switch it on. It's picking up the data. If I speak, let us say, oh wow, just see the yellow color. It's picked up a data. You flip through a book for a long period. Oh, he has spent more time on this book, on these pages, and less time on another book. Everything is now being... You don't need to switch on the mobile, you don't need to speak on that. And that's why nowadays, actually you will find very difficult to have mobiles which you can switch off. That was old time. Switch off kar de. Who don't switch off the mobile? Who switches off the mobile? Sometimes you don't even know how to switch off the mobile in the ashram when they ask you. That's what I'm saying. So all your data, this...
light on all the time.
So this, what we are talking now, is picking up. Now, it so much of data it will not use. But it's all going into the feed store. AI will take just a few seconds to analyze data and say, ki, okay, Mr. Pradeep Narang, if you want to win his heart, go and talk about mother and say that, you know, I'll do something good about society and he'll vote for you. I'm just giving a very crude example. So this is how it is operating. So where we have lost our autonomy and given it back to somebody else, this is a dangerous situation. And leave aside the other aspects of AI, biological loss. Yes, it has some gains. Everything has some plus point, no doubt about it. When medicine came, it helped to cure certain diseases, but took away our natural health. So people are not realizing the danger now. And the only solution, that's why, well, you cannot stop these things. They will come. You can learn about them, use them wisely, all that is fine. But it is a crisis of spiritual evolution. That's why Mother says, Shobindo says, that technological advancement before which man has become a pygmy. This 1914-15 he's writing, or rather 1917. That today what we are facing is a spiritual crisis because technology has advanced so much. Then AI is nowhere in sight. And then he says the only way is that man should evolve beyond it. That is Krishna dancing over the Kaliya. So you go beyond it and you develop the SI.
So which it means that as you, I think ultimate victory, I'm talking about ultimate
yes,
victory,
yes.
Is that we are evolving much faster than AI will ever.
Only way. And whatever doesn't, because see, just imagine after maybe there will be two sections of humanity, one which will evolve. Say some of us here are able to connect to these things, but an average person is not able to connect to these things. He thinks very cool, it's good. Well, at an immediate level, it does gratify. Imagine if you go and do your homework on AI, Chat GPT or anything.
It's amazing.
No, it's amazing. But what's happening to, you know, the joy of poetry? Other day I was having a conversation with someone, which was, what was this poem by Wordsworth? Not a spirit's slumber did my seal, but there was another poem where he speaks about a woman who is reaping, the solitary reaper. Yeah. Amazing poem. Now the crux of the poem is in the last four lines. And that's where one does not notice that, you know, there is a sad strain of labor mingling with heavenly. It's a transmutation of the, even the sadder stains have a celestial touch to it. Now, this is a mystic experience. So when it was asked to the teachers, the student who was sharing with me was asking me, so teacher gave a very bland, in fact, she didn't explain. She said, this is only completing this whole thing. AI cannot explain that because you have to have a mystic sense. Later on, AI will bring because people will probably put on the net. So it will come up with this explanation. So that joy, that growth which took place by taking a challenge, a simple challenge like even calculating, that challenge when it is gone, then one of the two things will happen. Either man will look for a greater challenge. That's where spiritual evolution, what Satprem calls an adventure of consciousness, that he will turn within to take the ultimate challenge because there are no more challenges left. Or else he'll collapse because he is going the easy way, bourgeois ideal. Everything is AI generated, so I have nothing to do except probably sit on the couch and eat potatoes.
I had an experience. I did something deeply spiritual. It's coming straight from me. And I asked AI to refine it, polish it. This question you always, it just couldn't do it.
So that's what
it was missing the point.
Exactly. So this kind of a, you know, I used to be very fond of chess. Sure. So when we used to play, the ultimate during those days was, can you play against a computer? So almost all good chess players know how you can fool a computer. Computer is anticipating that you are a good player. Make a very silly move. But you have calculated in your mind. Now this has not been fed into the computer and can't figure out why you have made this move. And if you have calculated well, you can beat it. Otherwise it can calculate much faster. It can calculate a number of spread steps. So it is missing the mystic sense of life, the sense of wonder, the sense of the deeper psychic touch. And there is a real danger out there. So, but maybe a lot of humanity will go down that way, unfortunately. But those who will evolve through all this are really strong and fit, that there is no doubt about it. Who will still honor love despite the fast food culture. I put it like that. There are few, but still honor love.
May I ask you, sir?
Yeah.
Expectations of love, different stages of it. What do you think about brain hacking and love and surrender?
About first term you used was?
Brain hacking, because there's so much science on brain hacking.
That's what is algorithm. See, that is the problem. So brain hacking is the same thing. It's like if I want to get, I'll give an example of since brain hacking with regard to love. I want to get married to somebody because I feel a deep sense of love. Now, brain hacking is not something new, by the way, though there are two ways. One is the machine part of it where, you know, it builds an algorithm and it says, well, she's not the right girl for you. I can tell you based on all your choices, your past successes, failures. But see, what it is missing is that human beings evolve. Now, let me put it this way. That now let me put brain hacking in the other context. So how it used to, people would do it in the context of love. It is known that when you love someone and the other person wants to be close to you. Now, there is lot of ways, body language, your keywords, observation. Like for example, somebody asked me, what do you like most? I would say reading Mother and Shubhita. Now, this is the data which has gone inside a person. So when you ask a person, what are your choices? And if the person wants to get close to me, so what will be the natural thing? The person would say, I have a lot of spiritual bent of mind. Now you see, this is where it all starts. So it's another form of brain hacking. But that apart, what it misses is that even if supposing I made a wrong choice, apparent wrong choice, based on what? It may not be a happy decision. Let me put it that way. But I can turn it into a fast forward evolution for the love in my heart. That's where Mandodari gets a point. That I cannot predict. That, well, I made a wrong choice. But I am steadfast. That's what Savitri is about. That I go with the love in my heart. And can this love in my heart be upgraded, improvised, spiritualized, sublimated, divinized? If I can do it, and that's how Mother says, when Mother was asked that when love comes to you, us, what should we do? She says, she laughs and says, better to go through it. And then she says, of course, she says, not in the sense, she says, it's the best preparation for spiritual life. Then she says something very interesting. She says, well, there are some people who, because they are afraid of love, because love is a tremendous energy, you know, it sweeps you off your feet. So people over a period of time become so-called wise. And they advise their children, don't get into this. This is a very dangerous thing. But actually, she says, if you stifle the energy of love, over a period of time, you wash the baby with the bathwater. But love has to blossom. Love is a very powerful aspect of the divine. It will make mistakes, it will make errors. But if it takes to the journey of improvising itself, see, the mistake we make is that we want to change others. Why we do it? Because we want happiness and gratification. I don't like that person. I love that person, but now I don't like, because that person, maybe it can be as absurd as snows. You never knew that a person can snow. So this is one approach. I'm not saying it is right or wrong, not from moral point of view. I can take that approach that is very quarrelsome. I don't like to be with that person. This is one approach. And it's valid. People can separate. But there is another approach where I say that, well, he may not love me the way I expect and I may not get happiness out of that. But still, can I love? And that is an approach which has great potential. That's another approach. Of course, one has to be balanced. If somebody is torturing you, you don't keep on, you know, improving that. And, you know, if somebody wants to be free from you because love has passed away, yes, the person should be free. That's a different story altogether. But this challenge, inner challenge, that man can evolve through all these challenges. Somebody has completely manipulated you. People often ask this question in another way. That, you know, I trust people, but I have seen that people take advantage of you. So I ask them that, so the solution you think is to stop trusting? Then you have gone down to the same level. You have become a suspicious fellow. But your faith, that you put faith in people, is something beautiful. That itself is your growth. So a virtue which is practiced because of what you will get out of it is no more a virtue. That's why Sri Aurobindo says, what is the basis of ethics and morality? If you do it because I'll get a seat in heaven, or because I'll get a reward here, then it's not really a virtue, because actually you are practicing a calculated bargain. But when we are honest for the joy of being honest, even if we fail, then there is the strengthening of the moral fiber. And it's that much gain. Not that morality is the last word, but there is that much gain. And that's what we see in Indian story, dharma. What really is dharma? Dharma is, the beauty of dharma that I like is independent of everything external. Nobody is going to punish me if I do certain things. But is the dharma letting me do it? And dharma is not a code of conduct given by a book. Dharma is all that takes me closer to my divine essence. All that builds within me an atmosphere of peace, a state of inner joy, which comes when we widen, when we give ourselves. So that the beauty of dharma is independent of external circumstances. So while people do, they manipulate, they brain hack, they try to do all kinds of things. But what is my dharma is the only question I should ask. At least I follow that. What somebody has done, not done, is okay. We put it in another way, ki uska karam, uska karam. Mera karam kya hai? I would put it, uska karam, mera dharma kya hai? How I should be? And this not being submissive, it's being strong. Because dharma can also tell you to stay the hand of the aggressor. That's part of dharma. Dharma doesn't mean that I'll be, okay, somebody is... Dharma is a very wide, it includes all possible range of human activities and emotions. But each has its own right place and the right time. When you displace it, misplace it, then that is adharma, not dharma. So that's how I will tackle that question.
You see the relationship between Champaklal ji and Jamadha. He asks her, I mean, it's really, I was in my just love poured out. Because his relationship with the mother was such full of love. So he asks her, that all this while that I have served you the way I wanted to serve. Now I want to know, you never told me how you wanted to serve.
After 20 years of being in her unstinted service.
What a statement to me.
Yeah. So that's where evolving of love. So that's what we see, that this idea of evolution.
What did she say then?
No, this is not documented.
It's not documented.
She smiled. Mother and Sri Aurobindo, one of the beauty is that they would never say what they want. One example that I know who only gave is the mother and Sri Aurobindo. They just gave. And if at all they ever mentioned that you should do it, it would be only for the disciples' good. And there also, there is a letter of Sri Aurobindo, why he would not say it categorically. You must do it. He would not say like that. He would say it is better, just like Sri Krishna in the Gita at the end, he says, I have told you what I need to tell you, now you make your choice. Why? Because if it comes as a command from the Guru, and you disobey it, it's a serious consequence. The letter is there. That out of his love, he would not say that, you know, you should do it. He gave them the freedom. But he would always guide, illumine, explain, then leave people free to. So I think this is where things are missing. That the idea of human evolution, or turning it into a technological evolution, that's where we are mistaken. Human evolution is going on and will go on. And that's where the hope lies, and the stress should be in that direction. Till then, whatever comes, AI is there, technology is there, use it, but don't let it overwhelm so much that we are carried away by it. I mean, that's the minimum baseline.
But this great worry, you know, that the 300 most intelligent people, so-called intelligent people of the world, wrote to the UN, saying that this is a very dangerous, the most dangerous thing that happened is this. So I often wonder that...
Happened what? What did they...
this AI.
Asha.
And because this is completely overused, it's another Frankenstein and you know stuff like that. So I just wonder that, you know, if this is it, then we've been conquered. We've been conquered.
Yes, it's not only with AI. See how we were... we are being, now at least democracies are being manipulated, well known. Because algorithm, they tell you, you see what happens, simplest thing is on your YouTube. What suggestions come to you? Automatically it picks up whatever you like, those suggestions will come, those ads will come. So it's already happening in a big way. Your mind, your thought is being controlled without realizing. So thought control is the, thought is your freedom of thought.
This time, talk about the Indian election. Since you mentioned this. Indian election, everyone said that they will get more than 350 seats.
That that was wishful thinking.
Various people of different hues.
This is foolishness of people. See, I'll tell you, this Indian election, though, as such, democracy now is a outdated product. They have to evolve something better. Because if you do rely on a democracy, will work if the masses are enlightened. You can't work, you know, people said constitution badal denge, badal. Now, I am going one step further. Acha, badal denge to kya hua? Matlab, what if constitution changes? Let's have a debate. Constitution is not, Bible or a Gita or Ramayana that you can't change. It's a human product and it must evolve. Otherwise, it'll become like a 500, 1000 years back written book which don't change. People don't even think that. And both parties played to it. One party is saying constitution will change. The other is saying, no, we will never change constitution. Why should you say that? So all the people who are well-meaning, they turned away. They said, you should say, it's not that we want to change constitutions, have a debate. It has been changed several times and it's an evolving thing as human being. But yes, we will not change it in a way that is detrimental. That's all you need to do. You say, and that was what was spoken of, unfortunately, whoever wrote the speech, that no, we will never change any word of it. Baba Sahib Ambedkar's word is for us the word of God. How can you say that? So people who were relatively intelligent, who wanted to vote, they got, are ye kya hai? So,
throwback from, it was the villain, and we said, we changed the constitution.
Yes, but the point is, several other changes have taken place, and logically also. Somebody may change it for better or for worse, but it cannot be treated, and all over the world, I mean, I'm forgetting, France probably 400 amendments, they stand for liberty. America, shortest constitution, if you see, ek page mein, it is one page. So it cannot be treated as another Bible or Quran or the Gita. It is bound to change and it should change.
In England it is unwritten.
Unwritten in England, that's right. But we have written so much. So this is a stupidity. But see, this is how masses, when they are unenlightened, they are carried away. So without proper education, that's why Shobindo long back said parliamentary system of democracy is not suited for India. He also said we have to go through it. Yes. And based on your immediate interest, you are not even seeing that there have been historical connections between even races. Racism is bad, but the fact is humanity has certain distinct, I mean, you talk to a Pakistani on the other side of the border, Pakistan, Punjab, this side, you just can't know whether he is this side or the other side. The language, the lehja, what is it, the dialect, the even the nuances, the emotions, expressions, everything is same. There is no difference. But you are on two sides of the fence because of a religious divide. So that's very unfortunate. I mean, when the country was divided, this consideration that they have lived together for millenniums. Religion has come 1,500 years back and they created a divide and now it's falling back. So this divide-based humanity which has lived together for tens of thousands of years, they have a shared history. Now, I had some very good friends in Pakistan, one of them who unfortunately died. This lady actually wanted, said, she would say, Bhaijan. She would say, Bhaijan, I want to have a proper Vedic studies here. Will you come? I said, I'll come. She was daughter of an ambassador. Then I want to have, this is our roots, this is our culture. It is not taught, they don't discuss it. It's a wiped out period. So we have a shared common past. And whichever country tries to do this, now how in Indonesia, they have honored it. You have a common culture through which you have grown, so at least you acknowledge it. Even if you take to another religion, it's fine, but acknowledge that we have a shared history. We have the same mother. So politics, today I was discussing this, this party also, that this is the game. As long as people believe governments will change their destinies, forget about it. It's only spiritual evolution which will change your destiny. And it is also true, people elect the government that is their level. So if human beings evolve, you have a better chances. So don't look for government to change you. That's another kind of disempowerment. But change yourself as we grow and change. How did Chanakya overthrow a great empire? He changed the people. If you look at the history, Dhananand was unbeatable. He changed the whole perception. He took pains. And I don't know how many, 18 or 30 years. Gone, 18 years I think, very short period. So he could, because you have to change within, and as you change, things will change. UNO had passed, incidentally, youth hunt that time, 1960, he had also made a statement that unless human beings change, nothing will change. And if that is the condition, let's try to do something about changing human beings. I think Sri Chinmoy was the guru in UN headquarters at some point of time, disciple of Shobindra and the mother.
Sri Chinmoy from Pondicherry.
Yes, so he was a
product.
He was a disciple of Nalini Da and of course Mother and Shobindra. So he went there and then he became a guru to many of these UN and big people. So,
he had a UN.
He's a proper base. Yeah. Nice.
Heads of state would visit him.
So,
for his physical strength.
So, yeah, but now it is coming up, this idea that man must change, evolution. It's going on parallelly. So I believe what we are witnessing now is two things which are going at parallel. Technological advancement, algorithms, all this computer based and everything, mechanical, external control of life, political propaganda, financial world. On the other side, we see more and more our spiritual thirst. See, all of us gathered here, somewhere or the other, there is some kind of seeking. Otherwise, who would come down on a holiday? I mean, I'm just taking your example. Choose to spend 2 days or 3 days in Pondicherry, which is quite warm at this time of the year, though I think weather has been quite generous. But still, so because there is a spiritual thirst which has awakened, that's how divine works. So he awakens within us. The example is when Kansa's reign seemed impossible to be overthrown. What was Krishna doing? He was awakening the Brijbhumi people that, look, you can overthrow him. You don't need to be worried. And then he goes and overthrows so that they are ready. Same thing we see Rama. Rama could have done marvels, probably gone alone and taken on the army. Ultimately, he did that only. I mean, those four or five were enough. But he goes, awakens the Vanaras and all these, that look here, he empowers them. And then he brings the change. So this empowering of people through a evolutionary process and education process. Education is empowering them as human beings and evolution is empowering them as spiritual beings. So both are going on and they should go on. This is where the hope of the future lies, not governments.
In evolution, the vibrational changes of people are actually playing a big role.
Yes, so that is well known. That's the butterfly effect or morphogenetic resonance that it's very interesting that the tipping point, this famous novel by Fridtjof Capra, that's why probably mother spoke of a certain number in Orwell, that humanity initially the change is very difficult. Somebody will turn, somebody will feel interested. Then slowly it will gather momentum. By then it comes geometric progression. Then a point comes when it spreads like wildfire and it spreads inwardly. So this is where we are witnessing today. What we are witnessing is what Sri Aurobindo spoke of, the fourth revolution, which is the spiritual, the industrial and scientific and intellectual revolution, political, industrial, and industrial includes scientific, and the third was intellectual. That phase is over, spiritual evolution. And it is going to, probably it has already started spreading exponentially.
Spiritual evolution is continuous.
Then phases when it is very slow. See, if you look at the Middle Ages, what is called as the Middle Ages, whatever reasons, unfortunately Dark Ages, anyways, we won't go into that. So if you see, let's say India, Sanatana Dharma with its many-sided, wide spiritual movement changed into small streams of bhakti. Thankfully, bhakti nourished. If you see the mystics during that period, Sufis, Sikh, what is it? It's primarily bhakti and seva, if you go to the core of it. And then, of course, all the many saints which came north, south, east and west. So that stream of bhakti never died, fortunately, in India. But look at how narrow streams and sects and cults were formed. Vaishnava cult and, you know, Shaiva cult and Linga. But now again, we are awakening towards a wider movement. So that's what Sri Aurobindo speaks of as the hour of God. And from the evolutionary perspective, there are two phases. One is when there is a slow progression. So in that sense, it never dies. Always there are some saints, sages, somewhere or the other. The second is when it leaps. So the first is a preparation for the second. So in the hour of God, it is the former that prepared the latter. Former is when men are left to their own ego resources. Saints are there to carry on.
So the time has come for a leap?
For the leap. It has begun. I really believe it has begun from what I see all over the world. I mean, Mother's Grace, all everywhere I've seen, all different places. It has begun. It's going on a parallel track, largely unnoticed as a spiritual evolution. In a way, it is better. It's like Krishna growing up in Nandgaon. So they know something is happening. Comes as a suspicion. But men who would later on die, Jarasandh and all these, they don't know. Shishupal, what's going to happen? So this spiritual consciousness, now Mother uses the word now, the new consciousness which goes beyond spiritual. It's growing, it's still in infancy, but it's growing, asserting itself.
The new consciousness.
New consciousness. But it's growing unnoticed and it's very nice. Because that's why no propaganda, everything is happening, but this is growing. A time will come when the tipping point takes place. So when humanity will, already we can see the demand, the cry that is taking place in earth is for a change. They don't know what change, and obviously ultimately change is within us.
Have you reached a stage where I tell myself that I don't like myself, that I got to change, and it's imperative that I change, and you place your arms up to God and say, change me. If somebody, I can love myself. I think that kind of a stage.
So there are two ways of doing it. One is that I don't like myself. That's not a very positive way to approach. But to realize the limitations of myself. I may be the best person in the world, but all is too little that the world can give. That brings a powerful catalyst. This is coming up in humanity. Mangal Grah, interstellar travels, whole series on Star Trek. Okay, so what? This says that human life moves within limitations, the limitations of human life. That's coming up. Not liking and changing can be one of the ways, but more important, powerful is that even if everything is tick mark in the checklist, still something is missing. And that when it comes very powerful, like Sri Ramakrishna said, and Sri Aurobindo has ratified it in different words. He said, there is hope for two people, two kinds of people. One is the unlettered peasant. He doesn't use the word illiterate. Unlettered peasant. Who knows nothing. There is hope for such a person. Or the other who, having known all that needs to be known, still feel the limitations of all human knowledge systems, all human relationships, all human, you know, whatever money or success can bring. And this breed is coming up. I seen youngsters. Yeah. I mean, there are people whom I see more and more.
We don't have ashrams in all capital cities. Because love is so essential nowadays.
Yes, yes. There are centers, Sri Aurobindo Society, around 400 centers, if I'm not mistaken, all over the world, mostly in India, because India is a spiritual, fertile land. So you'll find less. In US, in New York you have, but that's very far, Matagiri. That's far means 2 hours, 2.5 hour drive may not be that much. But still it's a little away. New Jersey.
In all capital cities we have centers.
Yes, we have a center. Yes. No, villages of course, but in capital cities, all the major cities you have. So you have centers in Mumbai, in Bangalore, in Chennai, in Delhi. But if you say all capital cities may not be, because if you go to the, there are devotees, there are study groups. But many capital cities you have. Jaipur, of course, Ahmedabad, so that way. Now Kerala, probably there is no center, but there are devotees. So that way. So these devotees sometimes form a study circle. That way, centers are there. But
informal study circle.
Yes.
They're very large number.
Yes. That is very large number. So, abroad also, quite a few places you have centers and of course study circles. But most important is, this is one part, having a center or a branch is one part. But more important is that, see, even in a branch where maybe 30 people are going or 100, what matters is those few, one or two or five, who are ready for the change. Because, see, many, nothing wrong, people will be drawn and at some point they feel connected and at some point they, like Sri Krishna speaks about the four kinds of bhaktas, artharthi, they are not denied access to God. But the real seeker and the jnani is the rare variety. That is always a rarity. And where that kind of a person is there, it's wonderful. But true seeker and somebody who already is open to knowledge, yet loves God and wants to, that's a rarity. But that's always been a rarity. But these are the few which are the real catalyst of the change. So, Pradeep bhai... It is beautiful actually, yes. But maybe.
Earlier, I used to follow a lot of religious practices.
Yes.
But because of the societal norms or the pressures of the family, in the moments that I used to give a lot, and I was always made to feel inadequate. But once when I enough is enough and I walked away. It's not that I hate anybody or I'm just cutting ties or anything. But the more I started respecting and loving myself, I think I've become more spiritual, more inclusive.
Certainly. I mean, in the sense that, well, this is an age when individuality is important, because Shubhendu says there are three terms through which the divine manifests. Or rather two terms. One is the transcendent, which is the divine beyond all this. He manifests. So there is a manifestation that takes place in the transcendent realm. We need not talk about it right now. There's the eternal Ras in Vrindavan, up above there in the supramental world, new creation. The second is cosmos, so cosmic level. Third is individual. Individual is important. So nowadays we see the stress of the individual seeking his space. And if that space is not granted, the individual feels stifled. And 50 years back, 100 years back, even 50 years back probably, this was the situation, by the way, everywhere, not only India, where, well, women, for instance, had very little space. If you go all over the world, voting rights came much later. All this has happened in the previous century. Oppression of women, even now people don't easily allow a woman to become president or prime minister. So this was there. But slowly now this need for space, children. So conformity was the rule. It was the way of maintaining social order. But when a new evolutionary impulse goes, so it breaks the old social order. That's what is the Dharma Siglani. So the other part of the Dharma Siglani is the divine who breaks the old social order which he had established, because a new social order has to come. So that is the stage in which we are going now. So in everything we see that every individual will have his own ethical standard. What is the right thing? But that's where I was saying, this stage is being hijacked, kidnapped by the modern Ravana, ten-headed or many-headed, called AI. It's thought-stealing. It knows what you think and it's thought-controlling. So the moment you step out, see, there was a social order which maintained things on a particular track. Now you want to lead your own life, which is beautiful, you have the right. But you're also flooded by a host of things which are suggesting you what is the real life, what you should do, what you should not do, from the food you should eat. Now it's there, because once the cell phone is there, internet is there, you can't observe that much of. So you'll open. Once you have clicked on fast food, then you know it'll suggest. Once you have gone into it, habit, character. So one, while during this age of individuality, one should be very cautious that, you know, I should not slip that way, because that danger is really there. So there are a lot of individuals who are in that, what is known in that Dante's epic, in limbo. Limbo is where you are waiting whether your fate will be decided, whether you go to hell or heaven. It's the parishes adjoining earth and heaven. So we have Vaitarni, they have Styx river, and all these are people waiting in limbo. That Dante's beautiful Divine Comedy. And they are waiting crossover. So many people are now in limbo. And that's where there is a need to reach out, those of us at least.
Crossover. Yeah, there is Vaitarni, for in Greek religion,
same.
Crossing a river.
Yes, why, and why, no, no. There is a ferryman who comes. You have to hold up, cow kapooch.
Yes, no. So then they give you the
coin. Yes, all coin. This is there in Greek mythology. This is of course Roman. So Roman Greek, which was single. So basically, it is said the logic is that while there was never an Aryan invasion inside, which was the myth. But the Aryans of those days, Aryans have of course nothing to do with north, south and color of the skin, but a certain psychological type, they wandered. You see the life of Guru Nanak. Guru Nanak has gone right up to Makkah. How he traveled? Along with Banda Sahib, I don't know where he left his body, somewhere probably there, and while his birthplace is Nanakana in Pakistan, he has travelled all the way. So plenty of people, monks travelled, they carried the Indian way of life and a lot of people adopted it. So you will see many similar things in ancient Greek, is so similar, only the names are a little bit different. That's a whole fascinating subject. So river is always there, like you have a stable ground where consciousness is operating in a certain way. River is where the consciousness is now in a fluid state. River basically indicates there is a fluid state. So all that, the stable ground here is matter. So now material things are being undone, subtle physical is undone. Now you have to enter a fluid state before you transit to the vital and other worlds. So this is, river is basically you have entered into a fluid state of being.
So when you die and you...
Yeah.
So it's a symbolic thing?
No, it's a real event. Yes, but the river is, it is a river. But that river, like Jalatattva, Jalatattva is the fluid state of consciousness, where things are in a fluid. Agni Tattva, it's an intense, energized state of consciousness. It's a power which is very intense altogether. Prithvi Tattva is dense, compact consciousness, which is, you know, held back by the force of downward gravitation of pull of the inconscient, so gravity. So Jalatattva is that fluid state. So fluid state means transitions. And if you actually see in ancient times, the Vayu has come now, but Jal and Vayu are the means of transiting.
Yes.
So it's always a means of transition.
Joining the light or crossing the
path. Yes.
Is it your overcoming your fear of your possessions?
See, that will happen automatically. You're talking of after death, isn't it? So after death, there are three layers to our being. One is the surface personality, which is shaped through an evolutionary process. Like in a lifetime experiences, we develop fear of certain things because we had certain experiences. So we are conditioned, and unfortunately we think this is me. But from the deeper aspect, this is just a little formation, front formation. Then there is the inner being, which is the true me, where currents have entered, settled things from above. Like today, we have this, I presume, beautiful discussion. But this may not impact this outer personality. But this has given, shaped the inner being. It has gone there, shaped it. And then there is the inmost, which is the soul. So the outer personality with all its fear and all these anxieties and worries and burden, that is broken immediately almost. The moment the physical body dies, these things are disintegrated. Now when they are disintegrated, this well-formed personality, this is me on my card. Now I enter a more fluid state. The inner being is a fluid state. So in that state, one crosses over. So there is the river to occult vision, it can appear. It can take the form of a river, but essence is that you are crossing over by the well-formed personality, which we call as, no, this is myself. That's broken.
Not a retreat or a transit, but the...
It's a transit. It's a transit. When you cross over, now you are entering a space where your true self is being, you know, yeah, the purer self, and its experiences, the real experiences, there that counts. Before this transit, I am still Dr. So-and-so. I am Mr. So-and-so. That is broken. So when it's broken, if those who have discovered their inner being, they have no problem. They will cross over like in a jiffy. They don't need any help. Because they have always lived in their inner being. But those who do not, for them, they are the rituals. So you have the rituals, you have the ferryman, there is a help available. That, you know, the boatman comes and takes you across. So it's meant for that. Because that passage can be very, sometimes unnerving.
Isn't the ascended people
the same? Yes, they are ascended beings. Sometimes they may, he may come along with ancestors who have not yet dissolved. Who may be waiting either on the other shore. Yes.
This is another story altogether.
Yeah, this is a big... This is a book which I had written from Sri Aurobindo Society. It's published. Death, Dying and Beyond. So there you may get all this information. Death, Dying and Beyond.
He's written it.
Yeah.
He said published by Society.
Okay. One more question. I don't know whether it's acting this. My daughter works a lot with... transgender and queer people, she is also. But there's a general rejection and opinion from the public or the family that they are not the people to be trusted, and because of their, is it a...
This is all meaningless things. See, either way it's a meaningless thing. See, making a hype around transgender or obviously shunning them in Indian context at least. People often quote example of Shikhandi. No, transgender, you have a goddess. Renuka Yelamma is a goddess of transgenders.
I'm a doctor.
Yeah, they are regarded as very special people. That they are the ones who have, in India, the transgenders were specially blessed, empowered by the divine, that they can take upon themselves all the problems of the other people. So when we were children, we grew up with that culture where the transgenders would come and they would, you know, take on themselves and some money. It was regarded as something very auspicious. Unfortunately, now this is all hodgepodge. But why not? Everybody has a place in society. But equally, creating a hype, you know, a movement around it, it's like you're losing the real sense. Transgenders also have a spiritual being. They have a soul. Focus on that rather than the body. So, okay, I think I wish I could go on, demand of time. So, thank you so much, and please feel free to write, a message. Shikhar has my WhatsApp, so.
You'll share my number with Shikhar.
Yeah, and you can feel free to Text me if there is any question. Yes. And
take over the
definitely.
Talks also get uploaded on aroma.org. Plenty of talks. And these askalogda.org. That's where any question can be asked. And so, and we'll stay connected.